Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you guys with us. Don's in the house.
I'm here.
Dave is here.
Hello.
And it is, it's been a chilly start. Well, it's actually been a chilly all week, but we're happy to have you guys with us. Hope you're chilling out as well. Hang out for the next half hour or so. Lots of cool stories. Story about a young guy winning an ice fishing contest, and he can't get use the prize yet. And a black bear that took 400 selfies of himself. And the stories of that are yet to come. Stay tuned.
For the angler that has everything, or just thinks everything, grace your palm with the feel of a custom fishing rod made to your specs from Patriot Custom Rods. It will soon become a cherished tool in your hand, providing the sensitivity and feel you have long dreamed of. Patriot Custom Rods are specially designed to your species of fishing, rod weight, colors, grip type, and length. Treat yourself or someone else to a Patriot Custom Rod. Find us on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Morning, Don.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
How are things going with you guys?
Great.
Tired. Always.
Yeah.
Your hours. I can't
you
even
a lot
imagine
of playing
why.
Last week.
Let's see. Two babies, yeah. Husband, and a radio show.
Yeah.
Or I should say a radio station.
Yeah.
That's entertainment. Yikes. Well, there's. You can't avoid the cold, the topic of everybody's. Conversation just about everywhere is the cold, Don, and you can't avoid thinking about, is it going to do anything with the ice? Apparently, there's a lot of people that think it makes it much better when it's that cold, but there's so much insulation.
Well, yeah, it depends on how much snow is on the ice.
Yeah, and most of the places have a significant amount of snow on the ice, and we were talking off air about you can't fix stupid. There was a guy out drilling a hole in the ice, but what was the unique part, Don?
Well, I don't know that I've ever seen this, but it had to have been a pretty good-sized lake. But the ice was clear. There was no snow on it, but it was the winds were kicking up to 45, 50 mile an hour, and the ice looked just like waves, and it's all cracked, and he's standing there drilling a hole. And then he makes a comment, but the perch fishing was pretty good.
Yeah, no. Start out. This probably isn't the smartest thing to do.
No.
Really?
I wouldn't. It scared me just looking at a video, let alone being on it.
I'm sorry, but if you realize and you're telling yourself this is not the smartest thing to do and you're doing it anyway.
Right.
I think in that case, your priorities are a little confused.
Yeah.
It's like the guys on Green Bay.
Right.
About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, they went out and put ice houses out. They knew that the ice was marginal at best.
Right.
And they had the only way they could get them out was to hook up or launch an airboat and drive it across the ice and push them out of the broken massive junk that they were now floating in.
Yeah. That's, and in this particular video, the ice was all cracked. I was just waiting for one of the slabs to get up on top of another one and, you know, the wind will push it. And that lake could open up in a hurry.
Have you ever fished on Lake Superior? Ice fish?
No.
So I did once.
I don't ice fish anywhere.
I did. And we're fishing, and there's a bit, you know, you're going to get a current flow. So
in Lake Superior?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're fishing, and all of a sudden I'm looking down the hold, and the hole's not there anymore.
Oh, it's
not. At least... The first section of ice, there's a hole. A slab went underneath, and now I couldn't get my bait back because it basically slid under and chopped it off. I looked at my buddy. I said, we got to go. We got offshore or off onto shore, and sure enough, they started to break and it started to crack. And that was the last time I ever did that.
No, it's just not worth it.
No, it's not. It's just
not for me anyway.
Well, it's flat out scary.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, there's always extremists in every sport. You know, every once in a while you catch one of these videos of people skiing and they drop off on top of a mountain, and it doesn't always end well because there's rocks going down, and some places it's straight going down, and there's a few of them that make it.
Well, most of them make it now that are jumping up. Oh, yeah. Most of them, I would say the majority of them, they know the snow conditions. They've got it down pat where they can make that jump, and it's not a...
Well, the ones I was watching, they weren't faring so well.
Now, Don, if you ever want to watch something...
Let me put it this way. He had to walk down.
So if you ever want to watch something entertaining, this is absolutely one of those that sucks you in. You know, that black hole you can get into when you start YouTube videos. U.S. Extreme Skiing Championships. They're trying to outdo each other with a line on a mountain that's full of rock, and they're trying to take the most extreme line. And they're trying to do it, obviously, to win a competition. Well, when you're moving like that, it's not like you can plan every single bit of that path.
Right.
But look it up.
Yeah, it's
U.S. Like I said, National Extreme Skiing Championship. And it's not U.S. It could be Extreme Skiing Championship. They do it in Europe as well. And these guys do some.
It's like these people that jump off of either high mountains or high bridges.
Oh, yeah.
With a chute. And they wait to see how long they can wait before they deploy the chute. And when the people on the bridge are going, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the chute pops out, and about 2 seconds later,
they're on the ground.
Water. I hope he slowed her down enough.
Another scenario on the same tact. I have a friend of mine that's over in Japan, and he goes over there every year to go skiing. The snow is amazing. I mean, absolutely amazing.
But it's white and
heavy duty,
frozen.
Big, deep snow. Well, this last week, I had one of the top extreme skiers that actually was killed in an avalanche, and that has been. We talked about that out west. It's crazy. There's two people in that same slide, even though it's an expert, gone because they don't know the conditions changed and they actually set something off. That's one thing. That's one way not to die.
All right. Well, there's rock climbers that.
Oh yeah.
That fail as well, and
see the difference in the skiing part is the snow is unpredictable. The rock climbing part, you can somewhat plan what's going to happen unless there's something that...
Till you slip
or something like that. But in this case, it's scary.
Yeah.
You have a slab slide. I've been in a slab slide. It's
obviously, I have none done of the... I've never done any of the above, so don't plan.
It's scary.
It. No.
I'll tell you flat out. It's one of those moments that you realize we had a slab slide. We're outside of the slab area. And the whole thing dropped a foot and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And it dropped, it went, sunk a foot and a half and then slid about 3 feet. There's six of us standing there going, nope, other direction. We'll tell you what, we're going to be right back. We're going to talk about the young man that won something at a ice fishing contest and he can't use the prize. Be back for more. Stay tuned. Hey, Don, where do people need to check us out?
On thevalleyoutdoors.com.
And Facebook, of course.
Yep.
And all the cool stuff you're going to want to find anywhere in the United States if you're going to make a trip somewhere. Just want to go find something cool to do. You can.
And if you didn't file for your elk license in Wyoming, it's too late.
Oh, thanks for that.
Yeah, January 31st was the deadline.
Mer.
But most elk hunters know that.
Yeah. I would say. So the story I kind of teased before the break, a Minnesota 13-year-old won a truck in the Brainerd JC's ice fishing tournament. They call it the Brainerd Extravaganza. He's 13. He wins a truck. What do you think he can do with that truck?
You're not talking Hot Wheels either.
No, I'm not talking Hot Wheels. No, I'm not. He... won it with a 9.45 pound walleye, which is pretty cool. You know how many other people were in it?
No, I have no idea.
Take a guess.
This is up in the Brainerd area, which is central Minnesota.
Hole in the Day Bay on Gull.
Oh, I'm going to say there were 600 people in it.
12,000.
12,000 people?
12,000.
Wow.
3-pound test line, tungsten panfish jig, and a wax worm. It was 29 and a half inches long.
You know, I think his biggest thrill of the day was probably just actually catching the fish.
Well, and the funny part is, if you've ever been ice in an ice fishing contest, everyone is on top of everybody. And how in the world a walleye that big can get through all those lines? I have no idea. It's bad enough that you're out there fishing on a boat when you see a lot of, you know, people fishing, much less a hole, because they all pre-drill, for the most part, pre-drill all the holes.
That's, you mentioned that ice has got to look like cheese.
Swiss cheese. Kid called Zach Padmos, he's a seventh grader from Hutchinson, Minnesota. He pulled that off on the 28th of January at the Brainerd JC's Ice Fishing Extravaganza. And he won a new pickup truck. Pretty amazed, he said. And his father told the reporter, the reality that he could win the contest was quite amazing to him. He also, there was quite a few other surprise species that were caught. And he was expecting a tulipy when he hooked it.
Really?
It was suspended.
That'd be a big tulipy.
Yep. He outweighed the second place fish of 5.67 pounds. And another twist, the winning walleye wasn't the only fish he caught during the contest, held from noon to 3. Earlier in the day, he landed a tulipy just over a pound, and that he had not caught a walleye would have put him in 25th place. And for that, he would have won an ATV.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Yes. Apparently, he was destined to win something that day. His dad was there. His grandpa was there. Uncle was there. And his two family friends were there. It was his second time fishing that particular contest. And his father-in-law said he fished that contest 15 times in the past 20 years. And I think Greg, his dad, fished it 31 of the past 33 years, and that's what kept leading him to the group of where the deep water was, where they'd seen walleyes caught in the past couple of years. He said they caught the big walleye about 2 hours into the contest after registering for the fish and subsequent hoopla. He didn't really fish anymore after that.
So I'm sure his dad will give him a ride wherever he wants to go.
I suspect.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. He said the neither one is any stranger to fishing. He and his dad estimate that together they'll fish about 350 hours each year, and they live in Hutchinson. He loves the most is to get out and fish. For taking the first place contest, you get a Ford F-150 or a GMC Canyon, courtesy of the Mills Auto Group. He picked the Ford, but we're going to sell it. He put the money into an investment that he can be used in the future. Having a truck at 13 isn't very useful.
Right.
The Brainerd JCs has donated over $4.3 million to more than 75 different charities since the first extravaganza started.
That's amazing.
It is.
Yeah. The biggest issue with winning a prize that big is the tax.
Yep.
You have to pay.
You got to pay for it.
Yep.
No way around it.
So a lot of times people that win a big prize like that end up having they just sell it so that they can at least pay the.
And if you don't need one, you know, if you don't need the truck,
right.
Obviously. I still think it's funny, though. He would have won an ATV.
Did he not win that, too?
No, you can't win.
You can only win one prize. Well, I'm sure there's somebody with an ATV that's happy he caught the walleye.
I mean, it's crazy. So the neat part about that whole thing is a lot of times what they do is it's not that you're second place, you get the next prize, and third place, you get the next prize. They scatter the prizes out throughout the whole whoever catches a fish.
Right.
So that makes it super exciting because you don't know how you're going to end up. If you could catch a little sunfish and win a snowmobile or whatever is going to be there. So it really does lend it to a family to go out and have some fun with it, because you never know. You don't have to be the best ice fisherman to do it. You just go out there and plug away and see what you can come up with.
Sounds like it's a great event as a fundraiser, and that's what you're supporting and having fun doing it.
It definitely has the pluses.
That particular ice fishing contest has been going on for many, many years. I mean, 20-some years.
Yeah, I think it's 33 years.
33 years?
Yeah. At least in that, been a long time. Yep, at least 33 years. So, what's odd about a fishing contest like that, like we said, you punch a bunch of holes in the ice, so they have to be within a given area, you know?
Right.
And
well, it looks like a pincushion. I mean, I've seen aerial shots of those tournaments when they're drilling the holes. It's like every 8 feet there's a hole.
I know. So. It sucks. So, we'll tell you what, we're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about a study going on in the Upper Fox River. I think everybody might be interested. Stay tuned. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. So, Don, have you ever fished the Winnebago area?
Yeah, I have. Lake Winnebago.
Winnebago, Quiggin, Butamore.
Yeah, I've only fished on the reefs on the south end of Lake Winnebago.
Okay, so you've only just like scratched the
surface,
a little bit of the surface.
Yeah, well, actually, it was fishing under the water, but the south end by Fond du Lac. I used to fish out there with my grandfather.
Gotcha. Well, I've spent a lot of time there, and it is a migratory.
It's a big puddle,
flowage kind of thing. You know, what I find it's interesting with this is we've. When you fish tournaments there, we talk about how the spawning happens up in the upper swamp areas or the backwaters.
The north end of the lake?
Yeah, in the river itself,
sure.
in the Fox River.
Okay.
So when you look at how heavy the pressure is on Winnebago, they're looking at almost a tournament every weekend in summer. I mean,
sure.
It's heavy duty.
Plus recreational fishermen.
Oh, yeah, on top of it. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
So when I go there, it's one of those things where I've done really well in the tournaments, and then I've massively struggled because it's one of those.
That was, you've had some times when you did not so well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you find that you go to point A, they're at point B. You go to B, they're C. So when you formulate a plan, things change. And, of course, weather has always played a major role, especially early season there. You know, cold, wind, rain, it makes it ugly and difficult to go anywhere. And that's the difficult part about fishing. But my point being, the fishery, they've always been trying to figure out what's going on with the fishery. Where are these fish at? How to understand the migratory scenario? Where do they do all the spawning? Well, the story comes out, Marquette, Wisconsin, and they've tagged these walleyes to figure out where they're at, and they're trying to figure out where were they going to go. And the DNR from Wisconsin started this study. They answered questions and document if the walleyes have changed where they migrate and spawn since fishways were added to the Montello Dam in 2014 and the Princeton Dam in 2020. So they're trying to figure out, okay, are they actually using these fish ladders, what they call them?
Right.
And we're coming into the first years where the fish have the ability to potentially migrate to spawning habitat above the dams because the fishways were built. The jury, they say, is still out a bit, and the results having the upper Fox system passable now. It used to be, you know, fish get to that certain point. You know what fish says when he runs into the wall? Damn.
Yeah.
It's a sad joke, but figure I'd do it anyway. And it blocks fish from getting to the spawning area. So when they changed all this, all of it was prevented really from getting to some premier spawning territory. And all of this, the flowage, in other words, the upper Fox River flows northwest from its headwaters in Portage before curving and flowing north-northeast to Lake Winnebago, 110 miles away. And lots of marshes near Princeton that are just prime areas to do this. So 16 fish get sonic receivers, and they can be detected by acoustic receivers, and they attach them to bridges in the upper Fox so they can see where these fish are going, which is kind of cool.
Right.
I think it's neat. So Walleyes for Tomorrow is a partner in the study, and what they did is they captured fish for tagging. They contributed funding, including offering a $100 reward for anglers who catch a sonic tagged fish and report the tag to DNR. How many times have we heard about this, Don?
Right.
It's pretty cool deal.
Right.
But there's only 16, so it's not like you're going to get rich.
Right.
If you catch, even if you catch every one of them. They said that the walleye population is doing well, but they need the studies to really get definitive answers and answer questions they have as far as the fish spawning areas. And they want to learn what walleye do and really get an understanding of how they can better increase the population of fish. So that's the key thing here. And when they look at the fish ladders and doing anything else, they really need to look at this because the intensity of fishing that goes on here is pretty heavy duty. And in this particular body of water, the pressure and the effect that pressure can have is pretty significant. They had a sauger restriction. You couldn't take sauger. There's a pretty decent sauger population in Winnebago. And, of course, the transitions between the lakes as well, there's a big population. But the fish have generally been smaller. You don't get a lot of much over probably 22-inch fish population. There's some bigger, but it's not.
They're pretty rare.
Been hit pretty hard. Yeah, so.
So when do they expect some results from this research?
They haven't given an actual answer, but they're looking at completing the study on December 31st, 2025. They're going to give it a good
couple of
two, three years.
So in the meantime, have they been stocking the lake to help?
They have been stocking. They have been.
The resources.
The numbers. I don't know what the numbers have been, but nonetheless, they've been working at it. And that's with, and of course, with the various charities come in play, like the Walleyes for Tomorrow, they've done a great job as well, really contributing to that.
Right.
So, kind of cool. Needless to say. Neat. Story coming out of Minnesota, the Minnesota DNR 2023 Roundtable. You've heard about that.
Yes.
And some top topics. The time spent, a lot of talking about the Tim Walz announcement on the second phase of one Minnesota budget, including the one-time $118 million get out more that we talked about last week. And that particular scenario was pretty neat. MN Fish, we know MN Fish from Ron Shera,
right.
A big push. All the people are out there working at really trying to help that. And advocating for the basic infrastructure spending for more than a year, where they've been arguing to get that completed. And that's when the 2022 session collapsed, and the dollars that Walls earmarked for the priority never happened. And let's see if they can get that done. Opening conversation, they were talking about the economic future and the administration's overall budget. Hunting and fishing and other outdoor recreational expenditures drive Minnesota businesses and thousands of jobs. Including the budget's economic portion helps deliver that message to the general public. So really getting people to understand what it does for the overall
economics.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yep.
And important there. Longtime leader, Howard Vincent, he was the longtime leader of Pheasants Forever. He's transitioning into retirement in June. And so that was a big thing to kind of hit that off, and Howard Vincent Day. They also were talking about complaints that the roundtable content was running light on hook and bullet topics for an event that consumes a lot of Fish and Wildlife Division man hours and budget. Fish and Wildlife pays for 2/3 of the day's expenses. Eco Services pays for the other 1/3. One might expect more hunting and fishing content. That, however, has been a growing lament, and there's no sign that'll change anytime soon. But at least it was brought up. I like how that kind of poked the bear a little bit and see if they can change some topics. Technology creeping into the outdoors. A friend of mine, Jimmy Bell, they were talking about that as far as what is too much, and will they look at changing any regulations regarding forward-looking sonar and really providing some input there. They're also talking about some of the residents in the wetlands area that 9,000-plus acres of public lands near Duluth, and including trout streams that are part of the culture in Duluth, and they want the city to protect additional open space. And, It was a very apparently lively discussion.
Yeah, it's very aggressive at the state capitol this year in Minnesota. I don't know about other states, but it's been pretty aggressive.
Yeah, which is going to be fun to watch. And I'm glad you guys are listening, not watching, and stay tuned next week. We will be here from Ava, Don, and myself, Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. Glad to have you with us. Have a great week.